Blog Talk Radio.
Hour. Tonight we present a discussion led by your host, Polk Runyon, that's myself, on Enochian Magic's Aether Scrying System. This is probably the most often used and most popular of the Enochian subsystems. We will briefly cover its origin and original intent as a magical engine to control the politics of the world, how Aleister Crowley and others transformed it into a mystical ascent of the spheres, and that is as set forth in Crowley's book, The Vision and the Voice. We will look at its relation to the ancient Valentinian Gnostic aeons, and we will outline a watchtower opening and even let you take a little journey into T-E-X. That's pronounced Teutz. So if you want to meet the Enochians, tune in and find out what Zakarod Zamran means. Well, it means move and show yourselves. Now, we've had shows on Enochian before, and dealing with the origins and the scope of the whole system in very brief summary, because this is a very complex system of magic. So this evening we're focusing on one of the most popular subsystems, and that's the 30 Aethers. But what we need to do before we get into the Aethers themselves, what we need to do is to just briefly review, for those of you who are not that familiar with Enochian, what it is, where it comes from, and give you some little overview of it. The Enochian system of magic comes from the Elizabethan era of England. That's Elizabeth I, Shakespeare's Elizabeth, not the current Elizabeth. But anyway, during that time, there was a gentleman scholar by the name of John Dee, and he was referred to as Dr. John Dee. He had a master's degree in philosophy and mathematics, whatever. And Dr. John Dee eventually became a member of the court of Queen Elizabeth, and he was very prominent mathematician and scholar, lectured all over Europe. He was considered to be one of the great scientific minds of the age. And this Elizabethan period, of course, was a high period of scholarship and art, and in Elizabeth's reign. And John Dee was Queen Elizabeth's astrologer. He was also very, very much involved in what we would call angelic or white magic. And John Dee was obsessed with the idea of contacting the angels and recovering the original secrets of the biblical Enoch. Now, I think it's clear here that the biblical Enoch was supposedly, according to the Bible, taken up bodily into heaven and shown the workings of the universe by the angels. And also given the secrets of the fallen angels, those angels that descended to earth. Now, we have to make it clear, though, that in John Dee's time, the so-called Book of Enoch, that we're, most of us are familiar with today, was not part of the biblical canon. They hadn't rediscovered it yet. It was hidden down in a monastery down in Ethiopia during John Dee's time. They didn't have, so they had to kind of come up with their own idea of what the Enoch's secrets were. They didn't have the Book of Enoch. And so Dee wanted to go on the scrying off and find the angels and find the secrets of Enoch. That's what he wanted to do. But Dee himself was not a clairvoyant. Dee himself was not a what we would call a psychic or a medium or whatever. Now, in those days, in the West, unless you were a psychic and a clairvoyant and or a clairvoyant, you really, as a magician, you really ended up hiring somebody to do your scrying for you. And a number of these old magicians used children because children were more imaginative and more able to do this. Or they would hire a medium, a scryer, and to see their visions. Now, of course, today, using Eastern methods and you know, what we know about hypnosis and yoga and all, magicians are expected to train themselves, to make themselves clairvoyant through training. But in those days, they hadn't discovered that, those secrets hadn't come over from the East and hadn't been developed. So consequently, Dee hired several scryers to do this research into the secrets of Enoch. And the one that finally satisfied him the most and was the most talented was a rather disreputable character named Edward Kelly. And Edward Kelly was an alchemist, but unlike Dee, Kelly's Latin was very, very poor, and he had no Greek and he had no Hebrew. And whereas Dee was being a consummate scholar, Dee was fluent in Latin. He wrote in Latin, and his Hebrew was good, and his Greek was passably good. And so, but Kelly was a talented scryer, and Dee hired him. And so, what had happened with the two of them? Got to work on recovering their version of the Book of Enoch, their version of it. And this became one of the most remarkable magical experiences of the Renaissance period, or Middle Ages, or any period, because what they ended up doing was they ended up in an over 5 years period of about 5 years' time, they ended up creating a huge, gigantic system of magic, which was so remarkably constructed out of Dee's invocations and Kelly's scrying and his channeling, that what they put together was absolutely amazing. And they recovered a whole language. That's Enochian. It's called Enochian. And this language had a syntax and a grammar. You can translate it. You can speak it. But they recovered it in tablets, like they look like crossword puzzles or a Scrabble game or something like this. And they recovered it backwards. And because supposedly it was so powerful that if you did it if you recovered it straight on, it would, you know, shake the foundations of the universe or something like that. In other words, so it has to be delivered backwards. And yet, it formed words and sentences that could be translated. Now, let's be a little bit cynical here, which I'm sure will please some of our listeners. Let's say that if Kelly had had Greek, and if Kelly had had Hebrew, and maybe even if he'd had better Latin, he might not have had to subconsciously, back in his deep mind, invent a language. Possibly these tablets would have come out, and this language would have come out in Hebrew or in Greek or in Latin or whatever. But it didn't, because Kelly didn't have it. So what ended up happening, and this is from a cynical point of view now, Kelly, in trance, scrying, the de-invoking, he produced this language completely out of his own head. And this was what the great linguist and philosopher Noam Chomsky would call the innate grammar machine. Chomsky established some time back that we're all born with the capacity to create grammar. In other words, we have a grammar machine that we're born with. And so even if we don't learn a language, we're going to create one. we could create a language. And so this is what Shelley used. He used his own grammar machine, and so this language came through. It's entirely unique. And just for example, I mean, we'll do a little bit of it here to show you how it works. And this is the portal call, and I'll do it in a Nokia, and then I'll no, I won't either, because this one is not the one that I need to do. What I need to do is a little shorter. This is the chat to enter the aethers. Okay, that's a little better because the protocol goes on a little further. Okay, so we'll do this one. Zekarod Zamran Odoki Krekwa Zorge Labziodono Kramadoatiyaida. And that means, move and show yourselves. Open the mysteries of your creation. Be friendly to me, for I am the servant of your God, a true worshiper of the highest. And we're not just saying that that's what it means. That really is what it means. And once you get into studying Enochian, you can translate. In fact, when we did that film of ours, Beyond Lemuria, we did all of our spiritual pronouncements were all in Enochian, and we actually created Enochian for that for the film, because it's a replicatable language. It is, however, a spiritual language, so consequently its vocabulary is mostly concerned with spiritual matters. So it's kind of limited as far as what you can expect with it. The way that the Enochian aether system is constructed, and it's based upon the Watchtower tablets, which we'll get into in a minute, is very similar. It's very similar to the Kamea system, to the magic square system that Dee and Kelly were both familiar with from Agrippa. And the best way to describe this for people that don't understand what this Kamea system is that this is kind of like a crossword puzzle grid, or here again, a Scrabble grid. It's very similar to this. And the way you use this, one way to use it, is to run these lines across in various configurations and get your invocations, you get the names of your entities, and pick them off of this tablet. And if you understand how the Kamea system works for doing planetary talismans, you can draw a sigil from one alphanumeric square or cell, and then you run your line up to something in, you know, to another letter, number letter in another cell, and that's on an angle, and then you come down and to spell out a name, and so what you end up with is a linear design that spells a name if you lay it on the grid. And this is one of the major ways that we create talismans in celestial magic. So the system, even though it uses its own language, that, as I say, came out of the back of Kelly's head, even though it uses its own language, the system is it's worked in a traditional manner. And yet, at the same time, the Enochian alphabet has less than 22 letters, and it doesn't exactly correspond with Hebrew. Although there have been Herculean efforts to try to make it correspond with Hebrew. I know the Golden Dawn did a tremendous amount of pushing and shoving and squeezing and all to get it to relate to Hermetic. To standard Hermetic correspondences. It is a Hermetic system. Now we have to say that. It's certainly a Hermetic system, but it doesn't exactly dovetail with Hebrew, and it doesn't exactly match some of the regular Kabbalistic correspondences. There is some argument about how you apply it to the spheres and the paths of the Tree of Life. You know, it doesn't really quite fit. So one of the reasons I'm bringing this up is this is a system that should not be practiced, it should not be used until a student of magic has a firm grasp on the principles of Hermetic Kabbalistic Western magic. You shouldn't be charging into Enochian before you know your basic Golden Dawn outer order information. You really shouldn't. You should really familiarize yourself. The reason why that is that one of the things we do in magic, as I think most of you know by this time, we build this Hermetic universe inside our minds. And that's what makes this magic work for us, is that we program ourselves. We know all the names of the planets and the numbers of the planets and the letters of the planets and all of the various correspondences and the formulas, and we memorize them, and we know the colors of them, and we know all this, and we know how they relate to the zodiac, and we got how they relate to geomancy, everything else. We get it all worked out, so it's like a computer program. And we learn to draw the Tree of Life in exact proportions so it'll fit on a Pythagorean grid. And we just get our minds, we make a magical machine, like a magical computer program. We install all of that, and we understand how it works, and then we start manipulating. And then we start creating talismans, and then we start doing formulas, and then we start doing magical invocations and evocations based on this. Now, if you go jumping right into Enochian before you've mastered this, you're going to be, I'm not going to say you're causing trouble for yourself, but you're not doing it the way you ought to, and you're not going to get the most out of it. So be aware that you first have to have the basics of magic under your belt before you go venturing into Enochian. Now, with that said, let's talk about let's get back to the Aether system. Now, what Dee and Kelly came up with were these four watchtower tablets. They're great big acrostics. And these four watchtower tablets are supposed to be the watchtowers of the universe And we were just discussing a little while ago that if you've ever gotten a Watchtower magazine from a Jehovah's Witness, this is where they came from. It's originally the D and Kelly Watchtower system. But they don't like to talk about that. Anyway, these Watchtowers are at the different ends of the universe, you know, the four different quadrants of the universe, and they are referred to as watchtowers, but they're big tablets. Now, originally, way back in 200 AD or so, when the Valentinian student Marcus was developing his Summa Sophia system, and we have an article about that, of course, in the Seventh Ray, the Green Ray we just put out. They had the whole universe laid out in a 360-degree, right around the zodiac, and if they had four divisions of it, those divisions would be right around the way the zodiac goes. But for some reason or other, when Dee and Kelly did this, they separated the different cardinal signs, you know, applied to the elements, and they put them all in one tablet. So you have a fire tablet, you have a water tablet in the west, and then you have an earth tablet in the north, and you have an air tablet in the east, with all those three cardinal signs in each tablet. So it's a fractalated universe. In other words, it's the circumference of the universe. It's the four watchtowers of the universe, even though they are disassembled and set up to where all the cardinal signs are in the quarters. That means that when you stand in the center of a circle in an Enochian operation, and the tablets are hanging, as they should be, hanging on the periphery of the circle. You know, you have the air tablet hanging in the east, and you have the fire tablet hanging in the south, and the water tablet hangs in the west, and the earth tablet hangs in the north. And then over the altar, you have a little tablet called the Tablet of Union, which is the central cross that unifies all the elemental tablets. And then under that, you have the Holy Table, and on the Holy Table, you have a scrying stone or mirror. And in our case, we use a 120 millimeter amethyst orb, which sits upon a reproduction of the sigil of Emmet, or the sigil of truth. That's one way, that's our way of doing it. Others use the original D Holy Table with a whole bunch of little tablets running around it, but you could check that out. But anyway, that our way of doing it is to sit the orb on the sigil of Emmet. Now, so when you do one of these Aether operations, what you're doing is you're ascending the layers of the onion, like the Hermetic sphere, at the highest level is what the Theosophists would call the Devonshic plane. Now, by the way, one of the best commentators on Enochian, and I'm going to refer to his book, this is Gerald J. Schuller, and I know that some of these Enochian fuddy-duddies will say, oh, Schuller, but no, Schuller, I think Gerald and his wife Betty, I think they have the best practical books on Enochian that I've run into yet. Lon Duquette's latest book on Enochian visionary magic is an exception. That's excellent. But just plain nuts and bolts working, this book, Enochian Magic, A Practical Manual, by Gerald J. Schuller, is one that we use, and it's very good. Now Schuller is a physicist, and he's also a theosophist. So he kind of tries to set these aethers up on a theosophical model, And that's perfectly valid. And because Kabbalistically, well, that's kind of theosophical model actually works better. Now, what these the aethers go from Tayetz at the bottom, which we're going to play with a little bit tonight. Tayetz at the bottom, and that's the Earth tablet. That's the lower, you know, the lower astral, and then they go all the way up through to Lele or Lil. You know, people joke about saying, I'm going from Tech to Lil. Oh, boy. Well, anyway, it's Tayetz and Lele. And Lele is up at the top, and that's way up in the Devonshic Plane. So in between are ascending layers that you go through for visionary experiences. And we'll do a little bit of that. But let's say first how this came about. Now, Dee and Kelly were all full of themselves when they got this. They realized they had done something really amazing. So they took it over to Europe with them and did the grand tour. And, they was kind of doing double duty because Dee, with his scholarly position, being invited to lecture and advise the on occult and mathematical matters, the various crowned heads of Europe and all of that. He was also an agent of the British Secret Service. And he reported directly to the Queen herself. And he had a code number. He had a code number. And it was 007. You don't think I'm kidding? I'm not. This is where Ian Fleming got the idea for James Bond's 007. That was John Dee's code number in the British Secret Service. Anyway, a little bit of sidelight. Anyway, Dee and Kelly went over to Europe, and they had this favor system that we're talking about, and they had all these governors based upon these sigils that I was talking about, these little sigils on these tablets, and they had three governors for each one of these aethers, but when they first developed this thing, they called it Terrestrial Victory, and instead of being think of this now as a bug eye, think of these watchtowers as a bug eye. A bug eye that goes both ways. It goes out to the celestial sphere and reverses. It goes down to areas on the Earth. All right? So their original conception was that they had these governors on these tablets controlling various countries around the world. So if you open up these aethers and got friendly with these governors, you might be able to, at least they tried to sell this, one of these Polish noblemen on this thing, the idea, the crown prince or somebody in Poland, and they tried to sell him this thing as a means of controlling the politics of Europe, and which they seriously believed it would do. Well, it didn't work very well that way, but it worked. If you take the bug eye the other way, then it seems to work really, really well if you reverse the bug eye. So what happened later on with this system was that at some point, I mentioned that the Aurum Solis, which I know I'm going to get some Aurum Solis people mad at me by saying this, but the Aurum Solis is a knockoff Golden Dawn, okay? It is. And the reason why I know it is because they use Golden Dawn color correspondences, and Golden Dawn color correspondences were all created for the Golden Dawn, except the first 12, which were just the Newtonian spectrum, prismic spectrum, just whacked in 12, pop, 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 and then the rest of them were all permutated all down. So if the Aurum Solis uses those correspondences, they're a knockoff Golden Dawn. But anyway, somehow or other, they discovered, and it may probably predate the Golden Dawn, some magicians, I don't know whether it was, I don't think it was Tom Rudd, but some magician had apparently taken this aether system, and before they reverse the bug eye, they decided to make a grimoire out of it and use each one of these governors to give you a little something, you know, almost like goetic spirits. Oh, you got this governor, and he'll give you a, he'll cure the warts on your toe or something like that. And another governor will bring you money on Sunday, and another governor will do this kind of stuff, you know, low magic stuff. And where the Arum Solace got that, I don't know, but it could have been pre-Golden Dawn. It possibly was. Anyway, that whether that works or not, I don't think so. But anyway, the best use of the aethers was Crowley's idea, and whether or not he created this or not, I don't know, but he's the one that really popularized it. He reversed the bug eye and went outward with it and decided to use it as a means of ascending the spheres. In other words, similar to this model that Schiller uses, going all the way up from the lower astral all the way up through to the Devonshik plane, you know, and making these ascent, achieving wisdom, and experiencing what the aethers, the governors, had to teach all the way up. So Crowley wrote a book, and it's one of his best, by the way, called The Vision and the Voice. Now, he did these aethers, he scribed these aethers out in the wilderness, in North Africa, and then in Mexico, and whatever. And he'd go out in the wilderness, and he would scry in a big topaz. And then he would get the vision, and he'd get it, and then he would go back to his apartment or whatever, and he would embellish it, obviously, and which is okay. And then he produced this book called The Vision and the Voice, in which he describes his experience scrying in each one of these aethers going up. And this is a miraculous piece of work. I mean, it's Crowley was a hermetic Gnostic magician of tremendous erudition. And just to give you a little example here, I'm gonna read a little bit of his version to tell you. You will see now, obviously, that he has embellished this after his field notes. He brought his field notes back and he embellished it, but that doesn't matter. I mean, it's better for the embellishment. And it looks like we'll start on Tietz here. So he scried his way into Tietz and he says, "I am in a vast crystal cube in the form of the great god Harpocrates. This cube is surrounded by a sphere. About me are four archangels in black robes, their wings and armor lined out in white. In the north is a book on whose back and front are AMBZ in Enochian characters, wherein it is written, 'I am the surrounding of the four. Lift up your heads, O houses of eternity, for my Father goeth forth to judge the world. One light, let it become 1,000, and one sword 10,000, and no man hide him from my Father's eye. In the day of judgment of my God, let the gods hide themselves, let the angels be troubled and flee away, for the eye of my Father is open, and the book of the aeons is fallen.'" Oh, boy. Yeah. Well, now, you know, you can really have some good experiences. Now, I have a colleague of mine who has experimented with using Crowley as a pathworking script. In other words, he'll open my watchtowers and he'll take his students on into the ball and he'll use Crowley's Vision and the Voice as a pathworking script. And that's okay. You can do that. That's fine. Problem with that, of course, is that then you're doing Crowley's Tietz. You're not doing your own Tietz. So I really prefer Gerald Schuller's approach, where he gives you just a minimum of the correspondences that are in there that you're going to be, that you're going to be encountering. And what you do is you brief your fellow Aether explorers on what they can expect inside the Aether, and then you get them in there, and I'll tell you how to do that in a minute. Then you get them inside the ball and let them, and you might just say, okay, now we're going to one end, one quarter of the Aether, we're going over to the west, and we're going to encounter this governor, and then you give them some time to do that, and then you take them over to the east, and you let them give them some time to do that, and see what they get, rather than just listen to old Crow and have a curly trip. So that's the way I prefer to do it, and is to follow Gerald Schuver's method. Now let me say this about that: you need to, in order to do this effectively, you need to be able to get yourself in a trance. You're sitting on a stool, you're looking up at the ball on the altar, and you got to be able to have yourself in a trance to where you can project your consciousness into that ball, and then you close your eyes, and you're in there, and you're on it. This takes some training. And let's face it, this takes some training, it takes some experience, and unless you're really good at this, don't just go in there and try it without this is really sort of we do it in second order. Golden Dawn, of course, is supposedly goes all the way up to past Portal and into the Inner Order before they do it, but then most Golden Dawn organizations these days, there are people doing this on the side that are still in the outer order. But they still, you really have to be through your magical training. You should be able to get yourself in a good trance and before you attempt to do this. Now, let's talk about this watchtower opening, because this is necessary to set this whole thing up. Now, you've got your tablets hanging around the circle, and they should be hanging from, we got hooks in the ceiling, and we finally figured out how to keep these tablets from spinning around. What you do is you have them hooked to either side, so it's sort of the bridle. So they hang there and they don't spin around, and they hang about at eye level. Now, you will see some configurations where they hang the tablets on the altar. Well, that's not all that good, but what are you doing? You're not looking at them. I mean, they're down there below your waist. What good are they going to do you down there? So, but that's the way Crowley showed it one time, and people slavishly do it that way. I don't think it's very good. You hang the tablets around the circle in the proper quarters, hang up on eye level, have the Tablet of Union hanging in two-sided, by the way, Tablet of Union. One side of ours is very carefully painted. The other side is a color Xerox of a color copy of the one on that side. And you have it hanging down over the, over the ball. And so you're set up. And then what you have to do to start this off is you have to open these tablets. And there is a traditional way to do that. It's called the opening by watchtower. And Rigoni did a little book on this, and if you can find a copy of it, it's real good. It's called Ceremonial Magic. That's got the green cover. And he had several variations of the watchtower opening. Now, I'm going to read you our particular one. And we got it really simplified down to about to its minimum requirement. But there's a couple of differences in ours from others you're going to read. Now, number one, we're not Thelemites, and so consequently, we are going to emphasize the angels. And unlike, I think we're probably about the only people who actually use the four archangels, traditional archangels, to safety the tablets when we're opening them, and that's Mikael and for fire, and Gabriel for water, and Uriel for earth, and Raphael for air. So we use those. And I remember when I first got started in this, and Rigardi was in his Ptolemic phase, or at least he thought I ought to be a Ptolemite at one or the other. And I started to do this, and Rigardi said, "Oh, no, those angels have Enochian names." Well, okay, but I feel better myself. I feel better myself with Michael and Raphael and Gabriel and Ariel, you know, sort of the ones we know and love and trust, okay? So we added those. And we also, in order to be happy with the pagans and not offend our Jewish friends, we use our own tetragrammaton instead of Yod Heh, which of course is in this case Shema Atah, and that's that's the three mother letters of Saturn. So with those two changes in mind, here we go. Open the fire tablet while drawing and invoking fire pentagram vibrate. Start at the top, go down to the right hip, up to the left shoulder, across the right shoulder, down to the left hip, close to the top. Draw a Leo sign in the center while vibrating. Then say, by the power of the Archangel Michael, in the names and letters on the great southern quadrangle, I invoke ye, ye angels of the watchtower of the south and of fire. Mitome. Continue to chant in a humming fashion. Mitome. As you move to the water tablet. Open the water tablet. While drawing and invoking water pentagram, vibrate. Hem Veosiel Gaiol. Start at the left shoulder. Go across to the right shoulder, down to the left hip, up to the top, down to the right hip. Close at the left shoulder. Draw a scorpion sign in the center of the pentagram while vibrating. Aleph Lamed, if you want to do that. Then say, by the mercy of the Archangel Gabriel, in the names and letters of the great western quadrangle, I invoke thee, ye angels of the watchtower of the west and of water. Hekuma. All continue to chant in a humming fashion. Hekuma, as you move to the air tablet. You notice we're doing this in pentagram order, not just straight around straight around the circle. While drawing and invoking your pentagram, vibrate. Start at the right shoulder, go to the left shoulder, down to the right hip, up to the top, down to the left hip, close to the right shoulder. Draw an Aquarius sign in the center of the pentagram while vibrating. Shamata. Then say, by the glory of the Archangel Raphael and the names and letters of the great eastern quadrangle, I invoke ye, angels of the watchtower of the east and of air. Exorpe. All continued to chant in a humming fashion. Exorpe. As you move to the earth tablet, open the earth tablet. While drawing and invoking earth pentagram, vibrate. Immordial ectiga. Start at the top, go to the left hip, up to the right shoulder, across the left shoulder, down to the right hip, close at the top. Draw a Taurus sign in the center of the pentagram while vibrating. Adonai, then say, by the love of the Archangel Uriel and the names and letters of the great northern quadrangle, I invoke ye, ye angels of the watchtower of the north and of earth. Ianta. and all continue to chant in humming fashion, E-I-N-T-I-S, you move to the Tablet of Union. Now, the Tablet of Union, of course, is in the center, hanging over the altar, hanging over the ball on the top of the altar. Draw a circle as on a clock, start at 9, go all the way around past 9, end up at 12. Within it, draw an invoking active spirit pentagram while vibrating. Exarpe, bitobe. Start at the right hip, up to the left shoulder, go across the right shoulder, down the left hip, up to the top. Close at the right hip and draw a spirit wheel in the center while vibrating. Draw another circle, house on the clock, start at 9, go all the way around past 9, end up at 12, draw, within it draw, an invoking passive spirit pentagram while vibrating. Hikumananta. Start at the left hip, up to the right shoulder, go across the left shoulder, down to the right hip, up to the top, close at the left hip, draw a spirit wheel in the center while vibrating. Agla. Then say, in the name and letters of the mystic tablet of union, I invoke ye divine forces of the spirit of life. And then you give the portal call. Also new for Sage Balta Erexarpe Kumananu Tabetoam Zodakara Ika Zodakara Ude Zodamarianu Odo Kikleka Peamuel Ode Valan. And then you adore the Lord of the universe. Holy art thou, Lord of the universe. Holy art thou, whom nature hath not formed. Holy art thou, the vast and the mighty one, Lord of light and of the darkness. You are now open. Now, if you want to see that beautifully done a lot better than I just did, we feature that in our video, The Art of Magic, which you can get on Amazon for about $25, or if you join our associate member program and send us $10, you get that back along with, well, all kinds of other goodies. So, and you get, oh yeah. So you get to see, and you get to see Frater Roland do this watchtower in the temple, and really, really do it right. And it is beautiful. It's something to see. Okay, now you're in there. So what we do next is we do the appropriate Odokian call to open up the tablet that we're going to use. Now, they're not going to get into that right now, but we have an appropriate Odokian call. And then we roll out the, open up the particular tablet, invoke the particular king of the tablet, and that's in the center of the tablet. We have a circular pattern that establishes of letters in the center of the tablet that actually describes the king of the tablet. Now, for instance, for the earth tablet, it's Ra-a-gi-o-sel. And then we do the governors. And we do the governors. Remember, they're traced on the tablet and the little sigils like you would get on Phimaeus. So in the earth on the earth tablet, we have four of them. So then you evoke with your wand. And by the way, the best wand to use for this is the Golden Dawn Portal Wand. That has all four elements on it, and it also has a white pentagram on the top of it, so you can point with it. It makes a perfect, if you're Golden Dawn, that is. If you're not, just, use a crystal tip wand or a dorji or whatever you want. Then we get all the governors invoked and all of that. Then we do the call of the 30 aethers. Now, I said we were going to discuss the relationship between the aether system and Valentinian Gnosticism, and there definitely is a connection here, because The Valentin diagnostic system, which Marcus used, is unique in the fact that it has 30 aeons. It has 30 levels. Most of the Gnostic systems had either 10 or much more than that or whatever. Most of them 10. But that this Valentinian system that Marcus, Valentinian and Marcus used, has 30 aeons. And somehow or other, Dean Kelly managed to pick up on that. So what we call the call of the 30 aethers is based upon this Valentinian system, which was 200 AD. So they were reaching way far back, even though they didn't have the Book of Enoch. They sure were reaching back. Now, this one of the things about the call of the 30 aethers, it had quite an influence, by the way, on the Book of the Law, as you will see if you see it. You'll also notice that it seems to have a connection with the Book of Revelations. It's apocalyptic. It's very apocalyptic. And I'm just going to just read a little bit of it for you. What you do is, it's the same call for each aether. You just plug in the name of the aether. And, of course, in this case, it would be Teyats. So we start off, Madre ex das praif Teyats chis mikramos anir kau sago ad fisos Balzaras yada nonka goli mikma doan maad. And what I just said was, you heavens which dwell in the 30th air are mighty in the parts of the earth and execute the judgment of the highest. Unto you it is said, behold the face of your God. That's the start of the call of the 38ers. Now, this goes on, and you find out as you go further and further into this, it's apocalyptic. And in fact, Don Tyson, who is a very, very fine magician, and he's the guy that did that magisterial editing job on Freak's translation of Agrippa. Don Tyson actually proposed that if you completed this Enochian system, that you could, the Aether system, you completed the whole thing, you could bring about the apocalypse. That's what I think he was maybe exaggerating a little bit, but that seems to be sort of the gist of this. This is a kind of a scary thing. And you'll remember that LaVey, back when he was hyping his Church of Satan back in the 1970s, LaVey actually took the call of the 30 aethers, and he stuck Satan in there a few times, and he called him satanic. Well, that was quite a distortion, but this is not. As I said, this is the call of the 30 aethers is just as frightening in its own way as the Book of Revelations. The Book of Revelations, of course, as we all know, is a very violent and a very apocalyptic work. And frankly, to tell you the truth, I think if they were going to leave books out of the Bible, that might have been one of the better ones to leave out. I'd prefer to have, if they'd left in the Book of Enoch and left out the Book of Revelation, we might have been spared some pretty awful cults. But anyway, so it is. I'll give you just an example here. Let's see. One season let it confound another. Let there be no creatures upon the earth or in her the same. All her members let them differ in their qualities, and let there be no one creature equal with another. The reasoning creatures of earth, let them vex and weed out one another, and the dwelling places, let them forget. their names. The work of man and his pomp, let them be defaced, the buildings of him, let them become caves for the beasts of the field. Confound the understanding of her with darkness. For why? It repenteth me I made man. One while let her be known, at another time a stranger, because she is the bed of a harlot, and the dwelling place of him that is fallen. Oh, heavens, arise, lower heavens underneath you. Let them serve you, govern those that govern, cast down such as fall. Bring forth with those that increase and destroy the rotten. No place let it remain in one number. Add and diminish until the stars be numbered. Arise, move and appear before the covenant of his mouth, which he has sworn unto us in his justice. Open the mysteries of your creation and make us partakers of the undefiled knowledge. Oh, boy. That's heavy stuff, isn't it? Okay, well, that's one of the reasons why, frankly, to tell you the truth, Enochian should be something that you get into when you have had enough magic under your belt to where you can handle this sort of thing. And now, I think you have an idea of how the Aether system works, and let me just check the abstract here and make sure we covered all our points here. All right, we talked about the Valentinian Gnostic Aeons. We outlined the Watchtower opening. Yeah, we made a little journey into Teyut. Well, we didn't. Yeah, we did, because we talked about that with Crowley. And we told you what Zakhar Odzamaran means. Zakhar Odzamaran, Odo Kikreka, move and show yourself. That, by the way, is the chant we use to get ourselves into the ball. That's the chant we keep. We say over and over again to get ourselves into, so we can project into our big amethystine orb. Now, I'm sure that this has whetted some of your appetites to get further into Enochian. But again, remember what I said, that this is a system that you should not approach until you have a good grounding of Hermetic magic. And I'm not going to mention this fellow's name. He and I have butted heads before, but there is a fellow that has a book on magic that thousands of people start off with. And he's using simplified little Enochian tablet tags around his circle before you even know what Enochian means. And that's not good. You should not try to do Enochian operations until you have built your own set of tablets, made your own set, and until you understand how they work and you understand what the background of the whole thing is. You should do Enochian when you're ready to do it. Okay, enough sermonizing. Now, next week, we are going to have a special treat for you. We're going to introduce a new, highly experimental gothic film that was produced by our good friend and colleague, Ed Fitch, and it's called Shadows, and it's a very moody gothic film about a vampire game that turns out to be quite a bit more than just a game. And most of it was shot in Ed's old place. And you know, one sexy belly dance scene was shot at Rivendell. And I play the old vampire Lord Cray, the old Dark Age vampire lord. So you get to see me act vampirish. And we're going to have the writer and the photographer, writer, and the creator of the film, Richard Becker, and he's going to call in. And, of course, Ed, who is the producer of the film, will call in. So the three of us will be discussing the making of Shadows. And we'll tell you right where to go so where you can go right on the Internet and order a copy of it. And that will be next week. So be sure and tune in next week, and we'll have the ultimate vampire role playing game, and we'll have Ed Fitch and Richard Baker. So we'll see you then, and until then, good magic.